Welcome to another edition of the bookdesigner.com interviews. Today I'm really happy to welcome John Kramer. Now, probably John is somebody who doesn't need much of an introduction to most people in indie publishing, but let me give him one anyway. John's the owner of Open Horizons Publishing in New Mexico. And one of the things I know John best for is his website, www.bookmarket.com. Because it's the biggest repository of book marketing resources that I know of online anywhere. And I would encourage people, if you don't know it, to head over there immediately after this interview and check it out. John's also the author of several books, including the classic 1001 Ways to Market Your Book. Now, when I started in self-publishing in the 1980s, the first book I bought was the Self-Publishing Manual. I really needed that. And the second book I bought was John's 101 Ways to Market Your Book. It's kind of grown over the years. Anyway, John also operates the amazing bookmarketingnetwork.com, which is a terrific membership site with thousands of self-published authors and editors and other people connected with indie publishing. And I'm going to list all of these links under the video, so I encourage you to check them out. So, welcome, John. It's great to have you.
Thanks a lot. I really appreciate being here.
So, we're at the beginning of the year, John, and as we're likely to do, we frequently take a break around the new year to look back, look forward, and I've been talking to people about trends they see in indie publishing, and I'm really interested to hear from you. And one of the reasons is not only your great background in book marketing, but the fact that you were one of the very first people I know of who really took book marketing online. And you have these very big assets online, and you've been doing programs online for many years. So I'm really curious what you see right now in January 2012, what you see the state of self-publishing and book marketing is, and particularly online book marketing, and what authors should be thinking about going into the new year.
Well, there's been three things that I identify as most important in online marketing. One is one that I've been preaching for many years, and that's just simply to create relationships with top websites that are targeted to your topic or to your audience. And that I think is important. I think that's ongoing important. I think that will always be important. So that's sort of not a new trend, it's just a fundamental that everybody should be involved in and that they should be doing that. The new thing that I've been teaching, recently I started a course on doing blog tours, or what some people know as virtual book tours. And I'm teaching it in a way that's completely different than most people have been teaching it and doing it. Because I really recommend doing blog tours that actually have an impact. And so I've been teaching that. I've been teaching how to do what I call a mega blog tour, which is a tour of, 75 to 200 blogs, not just the normal 10 or 15 or 20 blogs. Because you want to create an impact, you really want to make something happen. There's a variation called the Superstar Blog Tour, which is more related to actually being hosted on what I call Superstar blogs. These are blogs that have 10,000 or more subscribers. And so it's active fans. And then I teach people how to do it. And then the third kind of blog tour that I teach is the Blog Palooza, which is modeled after the Zombie Palooza that Amanda Hawking did back in October 2010, that brought her book sales from 3,000 to 5,000 a month to 100,000 a month, then to 400,000 a month. And the only thing she did different during that time was the Zombie Palooza that she did. And so I'm trying to teach people how to do that. Then the third phenomenon on internet marketing that I find really interesting are websites like Goodreads and Shelfari and things like that. Goodreads is the one that seems to have the most impact from all the reports that I get back from authors talking about how they're marketing. But there's a couple other websites that I've become aware of recently. One's called DeviantArt. It's primarily an artist site, but they're really trying to expand their literature offerings and to connect with 30 million active users. It's a really big website that's totally under the radar.
Mm-hmm.
Another one that I just read about, I think it was just yesterday or the day before, is called Wattpad. And it was used by a woman who had a self-published novel on witches. And the New York Times wrote about, I don't know, Publishers Weekly wrote about her. And she's had 16.5 million reads of her book on that website.
Wow.
That's and I have to learn more about it and how it works. I think it's aimed primarily at the young adult audience. But, you know, somehow she got it. I have to figure out how she got it. You know, what did she do to get that many reads on that website that was totally under the radar for me until I saw the article in Publishers Weekly?
Yeah, I just heard about Wattpad maybe a week ago myself, and I've been interested to check it out. But you know, that's really interesting. You know, another one that I don't know if you've done anything with is Scribd.
I've heard some things about that. I haven't done anything with it yet.
Authors who've actually launched their career on Scribd, and it's another one of those communities. They have millions of members, very active and engaged. Hey, that's a red letter day when I could tell John Kramer something he didn't know about
before. I knew the website, but I just wanted to be reminded of it. And I had seen some impact on it in terms of people using it.
Yeah.
But so it's really interesting that these sort of, and they're all sort of under the radar mm-hmm. to some extent, certainly among authors. Goodreads is not under the radar. It's something people are using, and I think very effectively. And you know, but and again, I haven't used any of them myself, but I think they're incredible resources, I think especially for fiction authors.
Yeah, well, I've gotten involved in Goodreads in the last few months, and I can tell you that the discussion forums there and the networking possibilities are really phenomenal, and the people are very engaged. And of course, it's got that one thing that a lot of other sites don't have. And that is that it's populated by readers, not so much writers.
Yes.
And that's a big problem for writers who are marketing online, as they will tell you over and over again. You know, they're writing about their process, maybe, and they're attracting big crowds, but they're all other writers. And that's really not the point.
No, it is to the point that you want to network with those other authors. Because certainly if, you know, you got 20 authors that are all writing zombie novels and they start pointing to each other and they start interacting and encouraging their tribes to go to each other, that's good. That's incredible, incredibly valuable. But it is the readers that buy books. Writers don't buy books,
exactly.
Unfortunately.
Exactly. Well, I can't leave this topic because I think the whole idea of the blog tours, the mega tours, I mean, I think that's fantastic stuff. But I do have to ask you this. I mean, I was just talking to an author who did a blog tour for a novel that she launched, and she did 32 website blogs. And she felt like it almost killed her because it was so much work. So I'm curious, how do you manage to do like 200 blogs? I mean, you can't sit there and physically write 200 articles, can you?
No. In fact, in the course I teach you about 5 or 10 ways that you can essentially automate the process, write one post and have it go viral through all of those. But mm-hmm. there's a way to do that, that you engage the blogger and the blog readers so that the content becomes unique.
Mm-hmm.
And that's crucial to it because you want unique content on every blog. But you also have to have the blogger engaged in the process.
Mm-hmm.
If they simply put it up and they do nothing else about it, it's not going to have much impact for you.
Mm-hmm.
And so you really have to engage the blogger and have the blogger actively involved in the blog post that you do, your guest post.
So that's where the relationship building comes in.
That's where the relationship building comes in. And the work is in setting up the relationship. Doing the blog tour is actually really simple once you know how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But setting up those relationships is key. And you could easily do 30 blogs, but they all have low traffic, and so you don't get any real results.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot of the typical blog tours are, especially if somebody organizes one for you because they go to their same blogs every time.
Sure.
And a lot of the blogs just simply don't have a big enough audience to make any impact. So you're paying somebody $500 to do a blog tour for you, and you're going to all the same blogs. It was the problem that happened with the Amazon bestseller campaigns that used to be very popular. They died. I talked to some of the organizers, and they said, we can't do it anymore. And the real reason was is because they kept sending the traffic to the same people every time. And that dies. You have to create real relationships with targeted websites that are targeted to your topic or to your audience, and then you can have results.
Well, I mean, that leads pretty neatly into the whole idea of social media. I mean, a lot of authors see social media as the chief way that they're going to build those relationships. I mean, you have to identify people that they want to create a relationship with, to engage the people, and to develop the relationship. So I'm wondering
Right.
what your thoughts are on the social media assets we have available now and what you use or what you think authors would be, because a lot of authors don't have a lot of time. They're very concerned about, well, if I do this, if I do Twitter, I can't do Facebook and Google Plus and all this other stuff, so they're really looking to streamline their efforts. What do you have for them?
Well, my three favorite social networking sites are Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn. Google Plus, I guess, shows promise, but I just have never used it. And quite honestly, I don't know if I want to add it. I accept friends, but I don't really actively engage in Google Plus because it's one more thing to do.
So, yeah.
And, as you say, I spend 5 minutes a day on Twitter, 5 minutes a day on Facebook. And you can do a lot in those 5 minutes if you are efficient and you don't get bogged down in doing a lot of the, getting caught up reading other people's posts, which unfortunately, is what you want them to do of yours. But the reality is that, you can in 5 or 10 minutes a day on Twitter or Facebook do most of what you need to do to build an audience and to engage in joint venture partners. But again, the best place to look for joint venture partners is in LinkedIn because LinkedIn is a professional network. People join to connect. And that's why I think that one's important. And then, of course, I spend time on my own network, the bookmarketingnetwork.com, because that, which now has almost 7,400 members. And these are all book authors or publishers that are looking to partner with other people. So I still spend a lot of time on that site. I probably spend more time on that than I do on Facebook and Twitter because it's mine and I have to moderate it.
Absolutely. And when I first got started online, I spent a lot of time on the bookmarket.com and met a lot of people and made some great connections there. It's a Ning site, right?
Yeah,
Yeah, it runs on
but
Ning.
now it's under my own URL, thebookmarketingnetwork.com.
So it it has all the kind of Ning features with the those threaded discussions and stuff and
Right. So it has forums, you can do blog posts, you can post your events, you can post videos. It has a lot of things, but what I really try to encourage people to do is to really actually get involved in some of the forums where you can connect with other authors. And I think that's important to make that kind of connection with authors. But again,
I thought it
the
was great.
Goodreads, and then, like you said, you started getting involved in Goodreads, and Goodreads is the one, there's Shelfari and there's Library Thing and some others, but Goodreads is the most active site and it's the one that's producing the best results. So if you're going to spend time on one of those book sites, I would do Goodreads. I was surprised when I went there and I found out that, there were dozens of reviews of my book there that I didn't even know about because people were reviewing the book, even though I wasn't active there. And
I had the
so.
same experience when I looked up my books there, and people had already left reviews, and that's kind of neat.
It really makes a difference. But you can't, if you spend too much time on social networks, then you don't get to the job of, actually developing the relationships that you need to develop with the people that could make a difference, the opinion leaders in your field. And that's where you can really make a difference. And but spend a little time on Facebook and like what somebody else is doing. I have one guy that's sort of stalking me on Facebook right now. He's liking everything I do. But I don't mind, you
But you
know,
noticed
because
them, didn't you?
I noticed him,
Yeah.
and you know, if he wants me to do something with him, you know, I'm going to do something with him because he's already upped my profile on Facebook, and he's probably increased my clout score, you know. So, you know,
Yeah, I'm kind
that's
of,
kind
I don't know, I'm a little up in the air about clout, but, you know,
of.
I guess there's a need for some kind of tool like that, or maybe a need, I don't know. People like, you know, people love those comparisons and ratings,
Yeah,
and the
but the thing
number
is,
seems to be so seductive, you know? I mean, look at my number.
yeah,
So,
but you know, you can spend, you know, if you wanted to increase it, you know, it gets increasingly harder to increase it. And I think it's, you know, there's a certain validity to having a high enough clout score that if you say you're a social media expert or something like that, people will believe you. But beyond that, I don't know the importance of it. Though I did include put clout. Clout has a thing that you can connect your Twitter with so that you can see what the clout score is of anybody you're following. And I thought that was kind of a neat tool. So I created a list of 200 people with clout scores over 50 that I follow that I think are worth following, you know, other people following. So, you know, it has some value for those 200
So
people because.
it's a Twitter list, in other words. So you can anybody who wants to follow those people doesn't
On
have
Twitter.
to track down all 200 people. They can
Right.
just go to your profile and look
Follow
under
the list.
lists, and they can follow. And what do you call it? What's the name of the list?
People worth following.
Okay, people worth following. They could just follow, do that one follow, and they're going to get all 200 at once.
Right.
Yeah, I love Twitter lists. You know, I'm very active on Twitter, and I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, I created a number of them. I created a list of literary agents. I just updated that. There's about 250 on that list. And then I have a bookstore list of about 600 or 700 independent bookstores on Twitter. And book cover designers, you're in that list, I'm pretty sure.
Thank you.
I hope.
We'll both go
And
check afterwards. How's that?
a number of other lists like that that I think are nice resource lists. For people, you know, if they check out your profile, they can see the list you've created and then they can follow the ones they want to. And lists are a really efficient way to follow, you know, targeted groups that you want to follow.
Well, and I've also often encouraged people to really, you know, get in a, you know, lists are very easy to figure out. It might take you 5 or 10 minutes when you, if you haven't done it, but it'd be time well worth spent because it's so powerful, and it's powerful in both ways because a lot of the applications we use to see Twitter, if you don't use their website, like people have asked me, well, how can you possibly follow like 8, 10,000 people? And I always tell them it's lists. I don't follow 8,000 people. I've got 60 people on this list or 200 people on this list, and I have the lists sorted out so I could just, you know, focus on that when that's what I'm interested in. For instance, I've
Right.
got a list of people that I think are good if you want to follow if you're a self-publisher. So, you know, and I've had a tremendous amount of action on that list because
Am
it's
I on
just
the list?
efficient. Geez, I hope so, John, because it's going to be pretty embarrassing if you aren't.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure you're on the
That's one
list.
thing that I've just noticed among a group of internet marketers. I just joined a couple programs where they said, if you want to contact me, don't email me, Twitter me. And not through the direct message, but through the at sign the person. And they're saying that's the way that you can actually reach me. And so Twitter has that possibility if you're really focused on certain groups of people and creating lists of them so that when you're interested in marketing, you can go to your marketing list or to a list that somebody else has developed, like you or me. Because you don't have to just create a list, you can follow other people's lists. So you can click on it and see all the activity. So you don't have to create the list, you don't have to follow those people even, because you've got the list accessible anytime you want to follow them and see what they're doing and they're talking about. As it turns out, literary agents are actually quite boring. And they actually talk about what they're eating and stuff like that, you know. But and then they talk about the authors they're representing. But I was actually surprised how many of them were doing what all the media says is terrible, telling them what, you know, telling us what they're eating and stuff
What
like
I had
that.
for breakfast today. Yeah,
Yeah.
how's the weather here? Wherever here is. That's
Yeah.
I love that one. But Yeah, I think that that whole thing about addressing people by the at sign and people's at sign, at signature becoming ubiquitous, I think that's the future. I think Twitter is, to me, a little bit like, the electric company. I mean, they just provide this, real-time service, and people kind of use it for whatever they want to use it for. And I think that
I actually,
it was
no,
really
so.
interesting to me when Apple upgraded their operating system for the iPhone and the iPad and actually built the Twitter functionality into the operating system so that every application that runs on the iOS 5 now has Twitter built in. And I really think that's where we're going. I mean, I think Twitter is that kind of application where it's so stripped down and just kind of a function that you can use however you want to use it.
Yeah, and the thing is that I don't check DMs anymore, direct messages on Twitter. I look at who's at signing me and who's retweeting me. Those are the people I'm interested in because they're helping to promote me. And if you want to ask me a question on Twitter, you at sign me. You don't DM me because I don't see those. I just don't check them. I probably should, but I don't.
So that's interesting. Most of the DMs I get are, from when you follow somebody and you get an auto DM back, and
Right.
who cares, really, honestly.
So
So I get them very rarely.
it floods your DM. And that's why I don't check it, because it's flooded with those, and I'm not interested in those. So I find it less useful for that. But the neat thing is that with Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn, there's a lot of things you can do to automate the process, including things like auto-tweeting your blog posts, auto-tweeting other people's blog posts. I have one person that auto-tweets every time I post a new blog on my blog.bookmarket.com blog. And
I bet
the
I know
first
who it is, too.
because she probably does yours
That's
too.
right.
And
Exactly.
it's the first time I saw it, I was traveling and I was posting on my portable computer and I had my phone next to me and it tweeted saying that somebody was had just at signed me on Twitter and it
Like a
beeped.
minute later, right?
It was like a split second later. So I posted and beeped. The phone was beeping away saying something had happened. And I check it out and it's an automatic retweet of mine. And
Absolutely.
it's done through a Twitter feed.
Well, so that's really interesting. So it's about building relationships, and using social media is really good for finding the people you want to have a relationship with, and then cultivating that relationship and getting to know them and their interests, and letting them get to know you. So,
And
what
then
about
create
the
partnerships with them, and then create partnerships with them so that you can do either an Amazon bestseller campaign or a blog, a mega blog tour or something like that. Because once you have those relationships and you've built them, they're golden. I mean, you can use them again and again and again. Because if you built and cultivated the relationship, it's there. People want to help. You're going to help them. They'll help you. And that's a key thing in this whole thing is the relationship, because so many people say, "Can you retweet me or can you post about me?" But they never post about you. And to me, that's like on Twitter, there's a program, a website out there called justunfollow.com that tells you people aren't following you on Twitter. And there are a lot of people that are now being told, somebody's teaching people to unfollow everybody. I don't know why they're doing it, but suddenly they're going from 20,000 people following to 200 that they're following. And the minute they unfollow me, I unfollow them because I'm on Twitter for one reason, the relationship. I want to know what people are doing. I want to build that relationship. If they're not following me, I don't feel I should follow them. So I unfollow people that unfollow me.
It's kind of like the old model versus the new model. It seems to me that what you're doing, John, is the way these sites work best, and that is, you build relationships and it's an ongoing thing. To me, the people who want to have, I'm following 10 people, but there's a million people following me, they want to be broadcasters. They don't want to be in a relationship, and that's the old model.
And that works for celebrities. Oprah can do it, and some people like that. But for those of us who really are starting out building, you know, our audience as a author or publisher or something like that, we need those relationships. And so to just simply broadcast is, to my mind, stupid, because it's the relationship that matters.
That's
and the
not
reality
gonna work
is,
either.
You know, on Twitter, it doesn't matter how many you follow, because you can selectively, as you said, use the list to follow the people you really want to pay attention to. But I like the happenstance discovery. Of just scanning my Twitter stream once in a while and finding something wonderful that I never would have heard of any other way.
Well, let me switch gears. I mean, a lot of you know, I'm a blogger, and a lot of people ask me about blogs, and a lot of authors. You know, I mean, we had that dictum from some of the publishers over the last couple of years, telling all their authors go start a blog. You know, whether you want to or not. How about blogging in 2012? You think what about authors using their blog as a marketing vehicle?
Well, it's obviously proven very successful for a number of them, like Amanda Hawking with her blog and things like that. But I think you need the blog for I'm going tongue tied here, trying to say too much at once.
Take your time.
You want to blog to have that ongoing fresh content on your website. You don't have to have your blog on the front page of your website, but the fact that the blog exists on the website and has fresh content really makes a difference for your website, because that ongoing fresh content is important. And most authors set up a 10 or 20 page website, and it's a static site. It doesn't change. None of their pages changes. So the only thing that's going to change is their blog. And that's why they need the blog. Now, on my bookmarket.com website, I'm changing, you know, probably 50 pages a week. So I'm continually updating. So my blog, you know, my website itself is always fresh to Google. But the blog makes it even fresher, because the search engines love blogs because of the ongoing fresh content. And that's why you need the blog. Plus the fact that you can build up a subscriber list, people that subscribe to your blog through a feed burner or something like that. But they can actually, you know, get an email whenever you post a new blog post, and then they become more engaged with you. And it really makes a difference. Those people that have built up their blogs to where they're a superstar blog, where they have 10,000 to 100,000 people following, subscribing to their blog, they're having major impact. They're getting incredible results that used to be only available when you had an email subscriber list. But even a blog subscriber list nowadays, for some people, is actually more productive than the email subscriber list.
Well, yeah, and I'm thinking about CopyBlogger. CopyBlogger has built basically a media empire that they're building, and a software empire, and it's been through their subscriber list, which is up over 120,000 now, I think.
Right,
and that's where the power of their list is. It's in the subscribers.
Yeah, and that's subscribing to the blog, not necessarily to an email newsletter. And Seth Godin, I mean, he does, his blog is his platform.
Yeah, and he, it's funny, because it doesn't matter how much success Seth has, he keeps posting to that blog, you know, like every day or every 2 days. I mean, he does not stop. And I think that people could take a lesson from that, actually, because he's been doing it for a very long time.
I actually, during January and February, I've been doing a guest post blog month, basically, sort of a blog palooza. And I'm, seeing much more greater increase in the number of people reading my blog as a result of that, because I'm posting every day. And it's not always me posting, because I have guest posts most of the time.
Sure.
During these 2 months. And the fact is that blog posts don't have to be long. You can share a photo. You can share a video. You can just share a quote. So you don't have to, just to have that ongoing presence in front of the people that might want to come and visit you. And so the content doesn't have to be big. You know, there's a whole site out there called Tumblr that is really specializing in photo blogs. So don't, people don't they don't even write a commentary on the photo. They just share the blog, you know, the photo on their blog, their Tumblr blog. And, you know, it's grown into one of the, I think it hosts more blogs now than any other blog site.
Amazing. It's amazing that it became so popular so fast. And it just goes to show the, you know, the multiplicative power of the internet, how stuff just multiplies like crazy.
Well, it's amazing, you know, to me, how much that happens with the internet. I mean, you know, it seems like people must be living on their computer or their iPhone or however they're accessing the internet.
Well, I'll tell you, John, I do a lot of writing, and I write on my iPad. And the reason I write on my iPad is because when you're doing something on your iPad, you can only do one thing at a time.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I'm sitting there writing. That's all that's happening. There's nothing else going on. And it's very, very productive. I get so much done really fast. And then I put it away, and I your brain starts to scatter into a million pieces because stuff is coming in everywhere. So yeah. I totally agree with that. So, well, I guess the last thing on my agenda, John, is to talk to you a little bit about ebooks.
Okay.
Ebooks. I mean, I had somebody in a publishing organization say to me about 6 months ago, well, we don't really have to worry about ebooks yet. They're not going to be very big until maybe 2015. I said, you know, I think you're a little out of the loop.
Yeah.
But what's your take on what's going on right now with ebooks and the balance between ebooks and print books, or what self-publishing authors should be thinking about in terms of ebooks?
Well, you have to have ebook versions of your book. That you got to get them up as soon as possible. Now, I'm saying that not having put 1,001 Ways up yet, but you need to do it because so big of an audience now. You know, even Sourcebooks, which is a small independent publisher, growing. They announced just the other day that 20% of their sales and income are coming from Kindle ebooks and other ebooks.
Wow. That's amazing.
And that's significant income for them.
Yeah.
There are other, but you know, the neat thing is that as your ebooks sell, the other, you know, print books sell more. That's been the feedback I've been getting from people.
You know, one of the things that I've talked to a lot of authors about also is the idea of the ebook as kind of a loss leader in a sense, where you can put, you know, because there's essentially no reproduction cost to an ebook. You know, authors can afford to, for a period of time, maybe they're going to have a bargain month or a sale, and they just drop the price of all the ebooks very low to stimulate readership, and then put them back up. And most of the people I've talked to have had tremendous success doing that. Now, whether it results in more ebook sales or there's an echo to their print book sales, I'm not sure about the print component. But they are telling me that they're going up the list with the low prices and then kind of staying there once they put their prices back up. So I think there's a lot of experimenting going on with ebooks, and I kind of like hearing about those experiments because people are doing some amazing stuff in the Kindle store, particularly.
Yeah, well, I just read the other day about there's a Kindle feature that for 5 days out of 90 months you can offer your book free.
Mm-hmm.
You can pick. They can be single days or multiple days, and you can set those times, and they automatically then go into the Kindle free store. And what happens is that every download in that free store, when it goes back into the paid store, those sales, those downloads count as sales in the rankings for the paid store. So giving it away free for a day and then popping back into being paid, which now Kindle allows you to automate. That means that your book in your category will rise higher in the paid category because of the Kindle counting the downloads, the free downloads that happened during the day you were offering it free. So it's an incredible tool because, as you know, where you are in the list really determines whether or not people see you and buy you. Because just like on Google, you know, very few people go beyond the first page of Google results. Very few people go beyond the first page of Amazon results.
Yeah, you know, it's very interesting, John. I've been writing a long piece about this, which I haven't finished yet, but it's all about moving from distribution, because we all remember the whole knock against independent publishing was you couldn't get distribution. And in many ways, that was true if you were trying to sell general books in a bookstore environment. And now moving out of the era kind of distribution into the era of discoverability, where really what's important is, can anybody find your book? Or where, like you say, where do you come up? Are you number 100, you know, and there's 20 per page? Well, you know, you're history. You're sunk, really.
And it passed, you had to be discovered in bookstores, so you had to have your book in bookstores.
Yeah.
But now it's getting discovered on Goodreads or getting discovered on Amazon or getting discovered through a promotion you're doing via a blog tour or being discovered on YouTube. Though I tend to tell authors stay away from YouTube only because they create horrible book trailers.
Book trailers.
If you're going to do YouTube, you have to create a channel that's worth watching.
Yeah, it's really good for nonfiction authors particularly, because if you could put any kind of like short instructional videos up with a link in them to your website or whatever property you're trying to promote, that could be very powerful.
But not a book, not the book trailers that I've been seeing. It's well, got to be,
of them are,
you know,
pretty bad.
To salespeople on, you know, your book, because they're, you know, everybody thinks, oh, book trailer, and you know, I've seen some very effective ones, but most of them, they're just boring. They're just same old. It's like they cookie cuttered something, and it's not interesting. I saw one the other day, and I'm going, but this doesn't sell me on the book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what's the point?
What's the point of it? And it was actually for the witch's book that was featured on Wattpad. Her book trailers stink, and they were done professionally.
Now we know.
I spend money on them.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to matter. I mean, I've seen some amateur ones that were really quite effective, and some professional ones, you know. But most of them, actually, I don't really find that compelling, to be honest with you. It doesn't sell me anyway.
Yeah, the most effective YouTube book promotion that I saw was for a book, I think it's called The Middle Way or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It was a book for women. A woman wrote about her mother and her best friends. And the video was about her telling the story in front of a group of women. Terrible production values, you know, and all that. Could have really been snatched up, but it wasn't. But it got 3 million views, like, almost immediately. Within a month, it had 3 million views. It went viral because, again, in this case, it was women friends. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing more golden than one woman telling another woman about something she loves. Us men don't do that as often, but women do.
Now, you know, the one I saw recently that I really liked, that I thought was very effective, was the one Jonathan Fields did for the launch of it. Now, he's not an indie published guy. He was published by Crown, I believe. But he did a very, very affecting trailer for that book. It was a book called Uncertainty. And a lot of his own personal story is woven into it. So the trailer is just him sitting there talking. That's all it is. But he's talking. He's a very good communicator. And he's talking about stuff that really is very evocative. So I thought it was a terrific piece that he did.
And that's a much better, you know, it's like, the talking heads we have right now on screen.
Yeah.
That can be very effective if you're passionate, if what you're talking about you really love and you want to share it with people. And if you tell a good story. Those are things that work, I think, better than the old slideshow production with music in the background and you saying something about your book.
Saved me.
It's been done.
Yeah, I don't even watch them anymore, to be honest with you. I've seen too many bad ones, I think. I got burned out.
Obviously, The Secret had a great book trailer.
Yeah, that was good. That was good. So, look, John, I don't want to keep you all day here. You've been very generous, and I really appreciate you taking your time. Is there any other tips or ideas or things that we should be thinking about or anything that you want to add to this discussion before I let you go back to what you were doing before?
I'm trying to get my camera to work. The most important thing in marketing books is creating relationships, finding, you know, a certain group of people that you can work with to help promote your book. Now, some of them should be, you know, like professionals, other authors and people like that. But also you need to create relationships with your readers because they're going to become your biggest fans. And it's word of, you know, 80% of all books are sold by word of mouth. Somebody says, go see this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now you can formalize that through joint venture things, or you can let it just sort of happen on its own. But in my experience, it's better if you can make it happen than to wait for it to happen on its own. Because it may not happen on its own if you don't get the first steps going.
Yeah.
And hucking through her zombie palooza got enough people interested in her book that the word of mouth took over, and she started selling more books and more books. So it went from 100,000 sales in December to 400,000 sales in January. That happened because of word of mouth. She had done the zombie palooza to generate the beginning of that stream. And that's why in doing a blog tour, you really have to get the blogger engaged, because otherwise their fans don't get engaged.
Mm-hmm.
And if their tribe doesn't get engaged, the results are mediocre.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Yeah, it's fantastic. It's obviously a lot more traction you can get if you've got a team of people pulling in the same direction instead of one person trying to push their book. That just doesn't work that well. Okay, well, listen, I want to tell everyone to head over to John's fantastic and content-rich website. Give us the URL again, John.
It's bookmarket.com.
All right, and I'll include a link with this video. And I really want to thank you. You've been incredibly generous sharing your knowledge and wisdom from all these years of book marketing. And I'm sure people will get a lot out of it. We'll also put a link into the bookmarketingnetwork.com, so people can go check that out. And I hope you get your book up on eBooks this year. I mean, come on.
Yeah. So if you Google book marketing, you know, my site is number one. The social network is number three right now.
Mm-hmm.
I forget what's number two because it's not important.
Mm-hmm. Well, nice SEO. Way to go.
Yeah.
All right. So yeah, go ahead.
Oh, no, just that SEO does make a difference. And, you know, to me, there are two things with SEO. That's search engine optimization. And the one is the content. And I think that's still crucial.
Mm-hmm.
And the other is that you have to have a certain number of links to your site. And the neat thing is that in a lot of the social networks, like the Book Marketing Network, it's a to-follow link, so that the link actually has what we call Google juice.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you only join the network to get that Google juice to your site and never come back, you're still getting some value out of it.
And those links don't go away. They're there forever.
They're there forever, or until I shut down the network.
Well, don't do it too soon, John. We need
it's
that.
It's sort of Facebook, you know. Facebook is, you know, there are companies that have abandoned their websites to just go on Facebook, but I would not put eggs there, because Facebook keeps changing their terms. And at some point, you know, if that was your active website and you're driving all the traffic there, you're going to die when Facebook decides, well, we're going to change things a little bit. It's a minor tweak, but it devastates your page, you know, and that can happen.
Well, it makes you what somebody called into a digital sharecropper. You know,
you
may be farming, but you're on somebody else's property. And, you know, that's not a good way to plan a business, basically.
Anyway, Joe, I've really enjoyed this.
Fantastic, John. Thanks so much. And once again, this is Joel Friedlander from thebookdesigner.com. And thanks for joining me.
Thanks a lot.